And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on a football Friday, with plenty to get to over the next few hours as we get ready for the football weekend. Coming up, we react to a wild Thursday night football game last night. What does this mean for the AFC and the Super Bowl picture in the NFL? Plus, the best games to watch this weekend. Bowl season officially begins right about now. What to look for in these bowl games. And, of course, I'll give you my picks for the weekend. We'll break down all of the games in the NFL this weekend and a whole lot more over the next few hours as we get ready for another football weekend. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Friday, getting ready for all the football going on this weekend and everything else. Joe's on the steel wheels. Welcome back, Joe. How are you?
Oh, surprise, surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
Hey. What kind of music have you guys been doing? You've been doing the Christmas music lately?
No, so actually, while Trent has been filling in here on the Morrow Midday Show, and we appreciate him doing so, he did a fantastic job filling big shoes. I left it up to him. He went away from the Christmas music.
Wow.
Yes, but we're now a week away from Christmas, or at least right. Christmas Eve, so we can get back to the Christmas music. That's fine with me.
Yeah, because I did Christmas music for Bobby.
Oh, I heard last all week. About yeah. this, yes. I heard that didn't go over so well, though.
Oh, that would be it. People called in and said they enjoyed it.
Oh, okay.
Of course, he told them not to encourage me, but
yeah, Bobby was still talking about it by our little Christmas party, our company Christmas party by that night.
Now, who doesn't love Mr. Hanky the Christmas Pooh?
Of course, yes. It wouldn't be a Christmas holiday without that holiday classic for sure. So yeah, we could get back into the Christmas cheer. We're a week away from Christmas, which is hard to believe. And moving forward with the holidays the next 2 weeks, of course, we won't have full weeks of shows the next 2 weeks. We'll have about half weeks. So this, we start a trend now here this next couple of weeks where the schedule will be a little sporadic. But got plenty to do, plenty to get to. We'll be here when we're not celebrating holidays. And let me start with this. As we get ready for another football weekend, it started last night with Thursday night football, Chargers-Chiefs, which was a wild game. It wasn't the cleanest or like the best played game, but it was a lot of fun to watch. And if you're going to give me Patrick Mahomes against Justin Herbert for twice, you know, a year for the next decade, I'll gladly sign up for that. But I thought yesterday, last night, showed the difference between those two in this game. Justin Herbert's dealing with a first-year head coach, Brandon Staley, and Patrick Mahomes has Andy Reid, even down to the weapons. I mean, how many mistakes did the Chargers make? And then in the biggest moments, it was the Chiefs stepping up. In fact, it was the biggest players for the Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes wasn't great, but he became pretty good those last couple of drives to tie up the game in the fourth quarter, to win it in overtime, not giving the Chargers an opportunity. And who was he working with? Tyreek Hill had a big night, his best of the year, and Travis Kelce had a big night. Right? And this time of year, as I was saying earlier this week, you know, last week, almost all of the favorites won. And I came in on Monday and I said, this time of year, it's about the better teams separating themselves. Now, there'll still be upsets. There'll still be surprises. There'll still be letdowns because football is that unpredictable and, you know, any given Sunday.
But the majority of the time you get into December, teams are trying to lock up certain seeds. They're even more motivated. They're trying to make sure they get to the playoffs. They want to be playing their best football. They've hit their mid-season stride. That's when you see these teams separate themselves. And we saw that last night in the sense that in the big moment, who stepped up? The Stars of the Chiefs. And for the Chargers, how many drop passes do they have? Inside the five, in the end zone, they had the fumble at the goal line. And of course, we'll get to the decisions from Brandon Staley, which leave me scratching my head. But last night was another example in which, yes, the better team, the Chiefs are still the better team, stepped up and won, but also the better players were the Stars last night. Justin Herbert delivered a great drive. Chargers go up with about 2:18 to go. Looked like they were going to get a big win and sweep Kansas City this year. And instead, here came Mahomes, and Herbert never got the football back. Now, I've complained about it before. I'll complain about it again. It won't make a difference. But I do think it's a silly rule in the NFL that in a game like that, Justin Herbert doesn't even get the football in overtime. And sure, his defense could get a stop, absolutely. But I just don't think it's good for the product. Did you watch that game last night? It was a lot of fun. Two-star quarterbacks. And it'd be a lot of fun if in overtime they got to duel against one another. Instead, Justin Herbert delivered what should have been a game-winning touchdown in the final 3 minutes and never got the football back and lost. Right? The Chiefs scored to end regulation, and Herbert did get it back, I guess, in those final 30 seconds, and they had one last chance. But you get the idea. Right? Mahomes goes down, tying touchdown, goes to overtime. Chiefs get the ball first, go down, they win. I think it'd be a lot better if Justin Herbert actually had the opportunity, if you put the ball back into the hands of one of your stars. And the Chiefs get the win last night. And as I said, going into the game, as we wrapped up yesterday's show, that was a playoff game. The Chiefs now have wrapped up the division. Going into that game, Kansas City had a 62% chance of winning the division. But if they won that game, it would increase to a 92% chance. That's where they currently are today. 92% chance of winning the division. They now have a 3-game lead with 4 games left, or a 2-game lead with 3 games left, whatever the math is. It's hard to keep up with these 17-game seasons. But essentially, their magic number is about 1. Now, if the Chargers had won that game, they would have increased their odds of winning the division from 34% to 62%. But now that they lost, the Chargers have just a 7% chance of winning the division. That was a big-time win last night for the Chiefs to go on the road and get it done like that. And that's when the top teams step up, and that's when the top players step up, and that's what we saw last night. Game on the line, it was Mahomes, it was Hill, it was Kelce, 3 best players on the field. Now, in regards to the decisions made by the Chargers, look, I'm all for being aggressive. It's something that I have railed against coaches all football season, especially the coach of my favorite team, Mike Zimmer. Don't be so conservative. Go for the jugular. Right? Put your foot on the throat of your opponent. But there's also a difference between being aggressive and being reckless. And I thought the Chargers crossed over that line at a certain point last night. You want to go for it on fourth down on that opening possession? That's fine. It's early in the game. First possession of the game. Try to set the tone. Go for the touchdown. You got right down there. Why they went with 4 passes after running the football, I don't know. I thought it was more of a play calling issue, but I had no problem with that. Come out and be aggressive on the opening possession. Try to get the touchdown. They didn't get it. You go for the fourth down later on in the first half. That's fine with me because you weren't passing up points. You were trying to get points. I thought it was the right call. They converted. I think it was like a 4th and 2. They converted it, kept the drive alive. I like that move. Then once you get towards the end of the first half and you go for it at the end of the first half, I had texted a couple of my buddies at the time. I said, this time I would just take the points. I've been with the aggressiveness all the way up until this point, but right now I take the points, go up 7 at halftime. Because in that type of situation, it's the end of the half. So you don't have to worry about like, oh, well, at least if we don't get it, our defense is going to, you know, have them backed up. We could get the football right back, short field, none of that. It was the final play of the first half. And it was either, okay, we take the easy 3 right now, or we try for 7. And I thought that was being too aggressive, too reckless. I would have taken the easy 3, go into the locker room with some momentum. You're up a full touchdown. Instead, you're only up 4. Now the Chiefs did not score a touchdown, but you gave them an opportunity that if they came out, they could have taken the lead just like that in the second half. I did not think the juice was worth the squeeze there. And so on and so forth. From the rest of the game there moving forward, I thought the snowball was falling down the hill. That early on, I got it. Be aggressive. Try to set the tone. Try to steal some touchdowns. But then, once you already had the lead and you saw how the game was unfolding, I thought that's when you should have adapted. And I'm a big analytical guy. If you listen to the show, you know that. I'll have plenty of numbers for you throughout the afternoon. I'm big into numbers. But I also think there's always a gray area to this. You know, it's like the Rockets when they lost that game and they missed, what was it, 27 straight threes, and they kept shooting threes. Why? Because it's, well, that's what the numbers say. That's just what we do. We're a three-point shooting team. Threes are better than twos. But at a certain point, you need to adjust. At a certain point, you have to realize, well, our threes really aren't falling. We are so off tonight. So why don't we try something different? Why don't we try to get to the basket? Or we've seen it in the baseball playoffs. You know, Blake Snell being pulled in the World Series. Well, the numbers say we don't want him to face the lineup for a third time. Yeah, but he's also throwing like a one-hitter. You know, that's the most important part of a manager or a coach is that feel for the game. Otherwise, you don't need a coach. If we're just simply going off of numbers and a book and what it tells you to do, why even bother having a coach? You know, just look to the computer to make the decision. And I'm sure I sound like an old man, right, ranting against the new school approach and the use of analytics. And I know that I've talked about this with Brent Thompson, head coach of the Citadel, where he said when you're going to use analytics, you have to kind of go all in. Otherwise, it's pointless. You can't really pick your spots with the numbers. That's not how it works. You know, you can't be half pregnant. You got to dive fully in for the analytics to serve a purpose. But I just think there's also a game feel. For example, the Chargers were struggling last night inside the 10-yard line, inside the 5 to push it in. In fact, Justin Herbert, to close out that first half, I looked it up at halftime. I did not look it up at the end of the game. But at halftime, he was 2 for 9 on pass attempts inside the 15. And yet, not only are they going for it, but they're throwing the football. To me, at that point, it's like, okay, you know what? This isn't working. Let's just take the field goal and add on to our lead. And by the end of the game, if you're the Chargers, boy, do you wish you had those points. Instead, the Chiefs had the opportunity to send it into overtime and then eventually win. And this is not a Chiefs team that you have to try to out-duel like that, you know, like past seasons. This is a Chiefs team that prior to last night had exceeded 20 points only against the Raiders in the last 2 months. It's the only team in 2 months that the Chiefs have scored over 20 points against. Last night, it wasn't a case where, hey, we need to score 40 to win. We saw that. You kick a couple of those field goals, you could have won that game in regulation with 24 points. That's all you need. And you kick some of those field goals, you would have had enough points to win. I did not like the decisions made by Brandon Staley, first-year head coach, who has been very analytical, very aggressive in going for it on fourth downs, and last night certainly didn't work. In fact, the Chargers this year, going for it on fourth and goal, are just 1 of 4. If you kicked a field goal all four times, you'd have 12 points. They've gotten one touchdown, 6 to 7 points. It hasn't worked out for them. And the last number, since we're all into the analytics in this approach from the Chargers last night, is that teams, when they turn it over on downs as often as the Chargers did last night, they're now 0-44 all time. Showing that when you're unsuccessful in those spots, it doesn't work. And it was just like pounding your head against the wall. Watching that game last night, they're two playoff teams, two exciting quarterbacks. It turned out to be a really good game. But along the way, as we were getting there, it almost felt like a couple of teams that just didn't want to win. They left both teams, but especially the Chargers, left a lot of points on the field. And if you're a Chargers fan, I can only imagine the frustration last night. That was a classic Chargers game. You know, it's like the Chargers are a franchise that is like they're running on a treadmill. Or you're chasing after that carrot on the treadmill. Where they're so close and yet so far. Like you're doing so much running, but you're really just on a treadmill. You're not getting anywhere. You're standing in place. And that's the Chargers. They look so good at times, and they make improvements, and they have a talented roster, and Justin Herbert, and now Brandon Staley, and then at the end of the day, they still find ways to lose these games. And you look up, and they're still, you know, only 7-6, and it's like, how is this happening? This team is really good. They play well for 58 minutes of that game. They play, you know, they control the game for 98% and still find a way to lose. Classic Chargers. They look good along the way, and then in the end, oh, it turns out they still lost the game. Just like, you know, you're running on the treadmill for a half hour, and I know you do it for exercise. You're not doing it to try to get from point A to point B. But you're just running in place. And you're doing all that running, and in the end, you're in the same spot. It's kind of like the Chargers. They do all that work, and then in the end, you know, they're still losing these games anyways. They do all this improvement. They look so much better than years past. Justin Herbert, young, talented quarterback, second in the league in QBR. And, yeah, they're still losing these close games. Now, here was Ryan Clark on ESPN's Get Up this morning. Of course, this was the hot topic. Brandon Staley going for it with all these fourth down decisions. Here was Ryan Clark's take on how the Chargers approached the game last night.
Oh, oh, no, it was the third down and two fumble. No, it was the four or three times you could have actually scored points and you didn't score points. When you have an opportunity to go up early, instead of doing that, you go for it on fourth down. And I get that people have an MO, right? We want to think, we want to make people believe that this is what we do because we always do it. But just because you always do it doesn't mean that it's always right. Doesn't mean that the analytics actually make sense. You know what's better, Sacho, than being up 1, 3, or 4? Is maybe being up 7, maybe being up 10, maybe being up 13. And so now, when Patrick Mahomes goes all Patrick Mahomes, we are up by more than one score, and we have an opportunity to win this game. You say they didn't leave anything to chance. You know what they left to chance? The score. They left the chance, the opportunities to get up more points on the Kansas City Chiefs. And you are wrong. The other Kansas City Chiefs that we saw in 18, 19, and 20, that team cannot be beat by field goals. I agree with you. This team can be beat by field goals. Don't get locked into history. Let's stay in the present. This is the team that, other than the Raiders, the last 6 or 7 weeks hasn't scored 20 points on offense. When they score 22, it's because Dan the Man Sorensen walked into the end zone like this during his prime time. Don't be fooled. Field goals can beat this team, especially when you at least try to kick them.
I'm all for being aggressive, going after a team, right? The Chiefs were favored in L.A. The Chiefs have dominated that division. You know, the Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes, but this was a playoff game. Season on the line last night, or at least division on the line. And I thought the Chargers almost, I don't know if you could say scared because they were being so aggressive, but I guess being aggressive because they were scared of what could be coming from Kansas City. And it never really came, not until the end of the game, right? Thinking there'd be some sort of high-flying offensive output. Brandon Staley's a defensive coach who had no faith in the defense last night. Defensive coach who couldn't slow down the biggest weapons for the Kansas City Chiefs. And a defensive coach who was probably overly aggressive on offense for the Chargers, costing them a chance to win a big game. The Chiefs now lead by 2 games in the division with 3 games to go, and they have a 92% chance of now winning the division. By the way, they start the weekend with a win, so they now also have the best record heading into this weekend in the AFC. Which takes me to this. Who are the best teams in the NFL? The Chiefs now have the best record in the AFC. The Patriots haven't played yet. They'll play the Colts tomorrow. The Packers, the Buccaneers, and the Cardinals are the 10-win teams in the NFC. The Chiefs now the only 10-win team in the AFC. Here is Rob Ninkovich, also on Get Up this morning, and granted, a former New England Patriot, but here is Ninkovich's take on last night's game and what that means for him when looking at the AFC and the best teams in that conference.
You know who'd be kicking field goals?
Bill Belichick.
The Patriots.
Yeah, that's right.
The Patriots will be kicking field goals, and they would win this game. So guess what? When I watched the game last night, I see two teams that kind of, to me, separated themselves behind the Patriots. Kansas City, okay, yeah, they got a very powerful offense. But guess what? Patrick Mahomes had the yips a couple times. He couldn't throw the ball at certain points in this game. So if you're the Patriots, you're watching this game, okay, the Chargers' defense can't really stop the run. They can't stop anybody. The Chiefs, if we take away Kelce and Hill, which, you know, defensively, that's what you do. You game plan against the Chiefs. You make sure you don't have Kelce run for touchdowns and first downs and Tyreek run all over the field. And you don't let Patrick Mahomes out of the pocket because we saw what happened there.
Yeah.
So the Patriots, guess what? They're the clear-cut best team in the AFC.
Ninkovich talking about his former team. Maybe a little biased, but I do get what he's saying about last night. You know, the old cliche is that teams don't win games, they lose them. Right? Like for last night, you would say, the Chiefs didn't actually win that game. The Chargers lost that game. That more games are lost than are actually won. And the Patriots, the great thing about New England and the most frustrating thing about New England, if you're not a Patriots fan, is that they never seem to blow a game. That Belichick-coached teams are always so well-coached that they never seem to hand a game away, to let one slip away, like the Chargers did last night, like teams do every week, like my Minnesota Vikings have done for since the origin of that franchise. And you watch your teams and you think, how do we lose that game? Oh, what a terrible mistake. The Patriots never really seem to do that. And you watch that game last night, that was two teams trying to almost hand it away. Neither one wanted to win until the Chiefs finally took over at the end. But here's the thing, and I've said this before, and it sounds like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth. I think the Patriots are the best team in the AFC, but I don't think they win the AFC because I still believe they have a ceiling that is below the Super Bowl right now because they're starting a rookie quarterback. No rookie quarterback has ever made it to a Super Bowl. In fact, rookie quarterbacks in the playoffs are 11-21 all time. and only three rookie quarterbacks have even made it to a conference championship. Oddly enough, all in the AFC and all in the last 20 years. Mark Sanchez, Joe Flacco, Ben Roethlisberger. But it doesn't happen very often. The only rookie quarterback to even win a playoff game in the last decade was John Wolford last year when he filled in for Jared Goff and the Rams beat the Seahawks. That's the only time a rookie quarterback has even won a playoff game in the last decade, despite the influx of quarterback talent lately. So I do think the Patriots are the best team in the AFC still, because I don't think they'll make those types of mistakes. I don't think they will hand games away. I think that's the team you can trust the most until you get to those biggest games of the year. And then I would really struggle to trust a rookie to get to the Super Bowl for the first time or to win the Super Bowl for the first time. But if there's ever a coach and a team to do it, it'd probably be Bill Belichick. When I look at the AFC, the only two teams I can trust are the Patriots and the Chiefs. I can't trust the Chargers. They're too inconsistent. The Bills, I can't trust. Their offensive line's not good enough. They're one game over 500. The Ravens are 8-5. They're in first place in the North. I can't trust them right now. They have over 20 injured players. Lamar Jackson's banged up. The Titans are 9-4 in first place in the South. I can't trust them until I see Derrick Henry comes back and he's healthy and 100%. Without him, I can't trust a Ryan Tannehill without Derrick Henry. I like the Colts a lot, but do I trust Carson Wentz in the biggest spots? The only two teams I can really trust in the AFC are the Patriots and the Chiefs. But I do think the Patriots have a ceiling to them because of Mac Jones, and when it comes to the Chiefs, they're putting it all together. 7 straight wins, first team to 10 victories in the AFC, a good performing defense of late, and just that talent on offense that when they need to turn it on like they did last night, right, you see what they're capable of. Patrick Mahomes has not been great this year. He wasn't great or even good for the majority of last night's game. But in the end, he still found a way to win with 2 touchdown drives in the last 2 possessions. Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce still had big nights against a defensive coach in Brandon Staley. I think the Chiefs are the top dog in the AFC. I know it sounds like I'm contradicting myself. I think the Patriots are the best team in the AFC, but I do think they have a limit to them this year, a limit to their success. And I would trust probably the Chiefs more so. With Andy Reid and those weapons on offense and the way the defense is playing, and they're playing their best football right now. By the way, this is the first time in 5 years that we have reached this point of the season, week 15, without a single team in the NFL clinching a playoff spot yet. It shows you how wide open the league has been. And when you look at the AFC, like I said, really wide open. How many of these teams do you think, like, oh yeah, they're really good? Everyone has holes. But the Patriots and the Chiefs are the two teams I would trust the most, even with their holes. Coming up, I'll let you know the most interesting games of this NFL weekend with our tasty top five as we do every Friday. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It was Christmas Eve. I met Santa hitchhiking. He was down on his knees. He got in my car. I could see he was crying. He said, times ain't been so hard since 1929. I got the blues, blue as I can be.
Coming up, the most interesting games of the NFL weekend. I will let you know here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Did you tell me this is the Drifters?
Yes, it is.
I always love the Drifters' version of White Christmas. That's a good Christmas song they've done. As we get back into the holiday spirit here, a week away from the holiday. Doesn't feel like it, though. I mean, it's been beautiful the last couple of days, today as well. I look at the weather report here. It says 76 degrees today, and it's supposed to be in the mid to high 70s all weekend long.
So, hence, some beach music, yeah. Christmas music.
There you go. I mean, it doesn't feel like Christmas. And as of now, I mean, it's too far in advance, but Christmas Day, it says it'll be 68 degrees here, 66 on Christmas Eve. But there's such a large range. I looked in the... You know, I wear the Apple Watch, and so the Apple Watch yesterday, I looked at it at one point, and I saw it always has the weather on the home screen, and yesterday there was a high of whatever the number was, let's just say 75, and a low of like 45. It was like a 30-degree range yesterday. Now, it ended up being beautiful. But I thought, man, that's quite the range, right? We always give weather men, weather people a hard time because you could be wrong 80% of the time and still be successful at what you do. So, you know, that's an easy way to do it, though. It could be anywhere between 45 degrees and 75 degrees today. We'll see how it goes. That's a wide range right there. But it was beautiful yesterday. Another nice day today. Supposed to be nice all weekend. We're a week out from Christmas. It's almost 80 degrees. That's what I always thought. You know, I was living in Florida, and now I've been here for, this is going to be the fourth Christmas. After growing up in the Northeast, you drive around, you see the decorations and everything, and the blow-up Santas or like snowmen and everything, the different decorations and the lights. It just doesn't feel the same when you're driving around palm trees in Florida, and it's 85 degrees, and people have the Christmas decorations out. But I'll never complain when it comes to nice weather. Before we get to our tasty top five of the NFL weekend, the weekend opened last night with that, really it was became a wild game between the Chargers and the Chiefs. Just want to send out my thoughts to Donald Parham, who suffered that injury on the opening possession. And I've never seen a player suffer an injury like that without any contact, right? He hit his head, it looked like, on the turf as he was coming down. Ball came free. Was unconscious, it seemed. The camera zoomed in on his face with his eyes closed, and they had to take him off on a stretcher. And I know he's in stable condition, but still in the hospital undergoing tests. So it was obviously a scary moment. I can only imagine what it's like for the teammates and the players on both teams to see that and then have to try to get back and playing football. And we know it's a dangerous game, but when that happens without even any contact, when you do it on just on your own, falling to the ground trying to make a catch like that, and it didn't look like, you know, you've seen worse falls, worse whiplash than even that play. It seemed so innocent as it was unfolding. And then afterwards, it becomes very scary. So hopefully everything's okay with Donald. He was actually at Stetson while I was broadcasting those games. So, I didn't know him well, but being around the team and traveling and everything, he was a very quiet kid, very nice, soft-spoken. He was a basketball player in high school, didn't play football, and played in Lakeland. He was from Lakeland, Florida, not far from Stetson University, where actually the College of Charleston played last night, in DeLand, Florida. And the football coaches at Stetson found him, 6'7", and they said, why don't you try to play football? And he started off real slow, right? Freshman year, couldn't really do much because he didn't know what he was doing. And by the time he was a senior, he was the best player in the conference, 6'7", athletic, wound up in the NFL, now with the Chargers for a couple of years, and then suffered that injury last night where I hope everything's okay and works out and he can get back to his team this season and keep on playing. But when you see something like that, it was scary. It was certainly a sobering moment. And then also just the fact that we always talk about the collisions and the dangerous plays in the sport. And on this one, it was, it's like one of those single car accidents. Like there was no contact. It was just him trying to catch the ball, falling to the ground, hit the back of his head on the turf, and seemingly was knocked out and had to be taken off on a stretcher with the head injury. And hopefully everything's okay. And by the way, Joe Buck, I don't know if he's carrying the water for the NFL. And I like Joe Buck. I always defend Joe Buck because for whatever reason, everybody hates Buck. But what was he doing in the second quarter when he was talking about, Parham was like convulsing. He was kind of shaking on the stretchers they were taking him out, which I guess reading up online from certain doctors last night, they were saying it's a normal thing for a head injury like that. I think they call it fencing. But what was Buck talking about? It's cold out. Maybe he was just shivering. That was a bad look for the broadcast and for Joe Buck. You're playing in a dome in L.A., and you're talking about, oh, maybe he was just – the movements like that was because he was shivering as they took him out in a stretcher. I don't know. I don't know what was up with that. I don't know if he's getting something in his ear to try to downplay the significance of that because we know how the NFL tries to sweep all this concussion stuff under the rug. I don't know what that was. That was a weird comment in the second quarter. He said, I'm getting a lot of texts and messages from friends and family about Donald Parham. You saw him shaking. It was a scary scene. Maybe it's just cold and he was shivering. What are you talking about? He was knocked out cold. He wasn't shivering on his way. You're playing in a dome in L.A. That was an odd thing. Anyways, hope everything's okay with Donald. When he was at Stetson, it was just Parham. Now in the NFL, I noticed they call him Parham, Donald Parham. Regardless, hope he's all right and good to get back out in the field this season with his teammates. All right, with that said, we do it every Friday, the five most interesting games of the NFL weekend. I got to be honest, a little more challenging to come up with five for this weekend, especially with the COVID situations. We got some big spreads. But here are the five best games to watch this weekend in the NFL.
Get busy, baby. Let's do this.
It's going down.
Oh, yeah? You want to bet?
I got five on it.
Well, we'll use this intro anyways. Number five, Texans-Jags. What's interesting about this is it's two aspects. Number one, they're both tied for the number two pick right now in the NFL draft. And it seems like the Texans have been more interested in getting one of those top draft picks than the Jaguars. But the Texans, you go on the road with a rookie quarterback. It's the battle for the number two spot right now in the draft. And then more than that, Urban Meyer is gone. How will that affect the Jaguars? Trevor Lawrence had some comments yesterday about how now they have some clarity. And you know, we've had reports that all the guys really like Daryl Bevel a lot more than Urban Meyer. And if you go back and you look, teams in their first game without their interim, or I should say without their head coach, in their first game with an interim head coach are 15-16. Doesn't sound great. You think that's still a losing record. But if you go back and you look at their record before firing the coach, they were only winning 27% of their games. That's why the coach was fired. So the point being, the numbers show that teams do get a boost when they fire their head coach, at least initially. And in this case, it's because they're firing somebody that you probably didn't like if you're on the Jaguars. Just like for you and your job, if they ever got rid of a boss or a manager of yours that you did not like, right, you're probably happy, a little happier when you show up to work the next day for that first week. And then maybe you realize, like, oh, this new boss isn't much better. But it takes a little while to realize that. Once you get that jerk out of the office, you know, the first couple of days afterwards, you're in a much better mood. Once you got Urban Meyer out of there, I'm sure some of those guys in that locker room are much happier today for Jacksonville. So I'm curious to see if suddenly we get some different-looking Jags team, right? Trevor Lawrence comes out and actually plays pretty well. Looks like the number one pick. Maybe that's too much to ask for this quickly, but I want to see what we get out of the Jaguars post-Urban Meyer, and then, of course, the battle for the number two pick. Are we going to get some shenanigans in this game? I remember, I reference this all the time, final game of the season. I'd have to go back and look at the year, but it was when Mario Williams and Reggie Bush were drafted. What was that, 2005, 2006? And it was a battle for the number one pick, and the Texans and the Niners, and the Texans intentionally blew that game to get the number one pick. They'll deny it, but they did some shady things. They pulled their quarterback. They were going for it on fourth down. They were trying not to win. I'm curious if this Sunday, Texans-Jags, you know, if we're going to get the Texans going for it on fourth downs, you know, on their side of the field. Not kicking field goals when they should. Doing some odd things because these teams want that number two pick. That's the number five game to watch. Number four, we'll go Bengals-Broncos. They're both 7-6. May not be the most exciting game on paper, but we have five teams in the AFC that are all 7-6. The last two wildcard teams right now are 7-6. So the Bengals and the Broncos are missing out on a playoff spot currently just because of the tiebreaker. So this is a big-time game on Sunday. The winner of this game will get a big leg up on the other. So Bengals-Broncos, number four. Number three game of the NFL weekend to watch is Saints-Buccaneers. Buccaneers are favored. Last I looked, I think it's 11.5. So why is this on the list? Because Tom Brady, this has been his bugaboo, at least in the regular season. He's 0-3 against the Saints. Now, he put up some big numbers earlier this year against New Orleans, but also had a couple of turnovers. And in his three regular season games against the Saints, in those three games, I believe it's 8 turnovers in the three games. He averages about 3 turnovers per game. He's 0-3 in the regular season. I don't know why. I don't know what it is. The Saints have the magic. They got that magic number on Tom Brady. That defense knows what to do. So the Buccaneers, they're at home this week. Double-digit favorite. Can Brady finally win in the regular season against New Orleans, going up against Taysom Hill? And Brady, if you go and you look at his numbers, he is much better this year at home than on the road. Big difference. Biggest difference in the league, in fact. Brady home versus road. On the road, he's kind of been an average quarterback. At home, he's played like an MVP quarterback. So he's at home on Sunday against a team that has given him fits the last 2 years. Let's see what we get out of Tom Brady for the Buccaneers. Number two game to watch, Packers-Ravens. It's the best matchup on paper in terms of teams' records. They both have 8 wins. The big question, though, is Lamar Jackson. Is he going to play? If he does, is he going to be 100%? With Lamar Jackson out there, if you told me Lamar was healthy, if he didn't get injured last week, we're good to go. We got Lamar Jackson against Aaron Rodgers, two first-place teams. This would probably be the game of the weekend. But I'm afraid that we're not going to get Lamar at all, and if we do, it won't be 100%. And without Lamar Jackson, maybe this turns into a Packers rout on Sunday. Number one, and it's why I've been saying this weekend instead of this NFL Sunday, is because I think the game of this weekend is tomorrow night. Colts Patriots, which is perfect for the NFL. Saturday night, it's the night game on Saturday. They're trying to take over Saturday now, and I think there's a big-time game. Colts-Patriots. The Patriots have been these are two of the hottest teams in the NFL. The Patriots have won 7 in a row, and the Colts, I believe they've won 4 out of 6. The Colts are number one in turnover margin during that time. This just excites me. I know it's not Peyton and Tom Brady. It's Carson Wentz against Mac Jones, But Patriots Colts are always fun matchups. You have Frank Reich against Bill Belichick. Frank Reich beat Belichick as the offensive coordinator in the Super Bowl a few years ago, putting up tons of points. Two teams playing really well. Patriots battling for the number one seed. The Colts are just battling for a playoff spot. Saturday night here in December. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm sure it's going to be crazy there in the Dome in Indianapolis. Both teams coming off a bye week, so they've had extra time to get ready for this one. It's the game I'm most looking forward to this weekend. Patriots-Colts. I think it's the best game of the weekend. Should be a lot of fun tomorrow night. Good to have the NFL on Saturday as well. And by the way, next week we get the NFL on Saturday as well, Christmas Day. We're going to get a Thursday game as well. So I always love this time of year, right? You get the NFL Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And then meanwhile, you got college football, the bowl games. Bowl season's already started. We got a bowl game going on right now. You got college football. You get home, right, on your lunch break or whatever it is. You're not working. You get home in the afternoon. You get off your shift. You come home, 2 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon. There's some random game on. This is always a great time. You got the NFL playing 4 of the 7 days. And in between, you're supplemented by random college games at all random hours throughout just the weekdays. Love it, even if it's Toledo against Middle Tennessee. Coming up, by the way, we'll preview some of these bowl games and look at the teams that could be most motivated. We'll do that probably next hour, though, when we have a little more time. Coming up, also in regards to these bowl games, opt-outs. This is always a big conversation, and more players continue to opt out, and that upsets a lot of people. We'll get to that coming up. It's the Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
I remember a Christmas long ago. I remember a hanging mistletoe. I remember love, lights of red and blue.
How I remember you, weep, weep.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, more players opting out of bowl games. Is it really a problem? Get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show. And coming up a little bit later on, we'll save it for next hour when I want to make sure we have enough time to get through it all. I'll point out some of the bowl games in which I think there's a difference in terms of motivation, because this time of year, when it comes to the bowl games, I really just think it comes down to, in most cases, which team's more motivated, which team wants to be there. We've all done things we don't want to. I don't think you put your best foot forward when you're forced to do something you don't want to do, but when you're happy to be there, or happy to be doing something, or looking forward to it. And I think you put forth a better effort, and we see that a lot in these bowl games. Got our first touchdown of the bowl season just happened as Middle Tennessee is playing Toledo right now. And Middle Tennessee just scored to take a 7-0 lead in that Bahamas Bowl. Now, that's a pretty sweet bowl, right? You get to go to the Bahamas for that one. And you get it out of the way before the holidays. It's the first game, so you get everything started. I like that. If you're Toledo or Middle Tennessee, if I'm one of the player on the teams, you know, I wouldn't want to be in one of these bowl games like LSU's playing in the last bowl game of the year. It's January 4th. I don't remember where it is. I don't remember who they're playing. But it's like, oh, come on, we got to wait all the way till January 4th to play this. It's the Tax Act Texas Bowl. LSU against Kansas State. 8 o'clock local, you know, their time on a Tuesday, January 4th. It's like, oh, man, we got to practice throughout the holiday. You got to keep us around here, get ready for January until January 4th for the tax. It's not even like a Rose Bowl or anything. The Tax Act Texas Bowl. Who cares? LSU against Kansas State. So if I'm a player on a team, yeah, this is ideal. All right, let's go to the Bahamas, play, get the game over with, and then hopefully, you know, we get some time off for the holidays and move forward. So we got Middle Tennessee against Toledo right now. And then tonight you got Coastal Carolina playing. That may be a game of interest for you. Coastal Carolina against Northern Illinois for the Tail Greeter Cure Bowl. I have no idea what that is. What's Tail Greeter? The Tail Greeter Cure Bowl. That's going on tonight down in Florida, Northern Illinois against Coastal at 6 p.m. So, if you're a Coastal fan, you can pay attention to that. Somebody asked on the text line about Grayson McCall, what type of fit he would be in the NFL. I don't know, because the big thing about Coastal and why they've been so successful is they run that unique offense where it's like a hybrid and an updated option offense type of deal. So, I don't know how that would translate to the NFL. I mean, we saw Coastal up close and personal this year, and he was really impressive, McCall. And I think he's got a lot of tools and a lot of weapons. But I think, there was even concern about the offense Trevor Lawrence was coming out of at Clemson. So I can only imagine what, maybe thought about McCall and what they're doing there at Coastal. But I think, he would be a really good fit for somebody like a Kyle Shanahan. And now Shanahan, we talk about that Shanahan offense. I mean, so many guys are similar. Both LaFleurs in Green Bay and New York run something like that. Kevin Stefanski runs something similar. In Cleveland, I think that could work out pretty well with that running game and offensive line and a lot of play action and bootlegs and stuff and get the quarterback on the move. But I don't know if he's just like a, drop back, pro style, throw it all around type of quarterback. I think he has to have one of those types of offenses that will help him out. We'll see how Coastal does tonight against Northern Illinois. But, of course, a big topic is opting out, because we got news yesterday that one of the bowl games that on paper is going to be pretty exciting suddenly becomes quite the dud. Michigan State against Pittsburgh. Kenny Pickett is opting out. Kenneth Walker opting out. The two best players in the game. Now suddenly it's like, all right, don't need to watch that one anymore. Here is Bob Stoops. He's coming back to coach the bowl game for Oklahoma, and then Venables will take over. And obviously Stoops has been in the sport for a long time. He was asked about this idea of opting out of the bowl games. This is an evergreen topic. We have this debate every year. But here's what Stoops had to say about it yesterday.
There's value in finishing, not only for the program, for your teammates, for yourself. I understand maybe if you're not in the top tier bowl game and you're a top 5, 10, 15 pick. I can somewhat see that. A lot of these guys aren't. And the bottom line is you can improve your draft stock. This is going to be the deepest draft there's ever been because of COVID and all. So that being said, you got any opportunity to improve, and show on tape the quality of play and the quality of player you are, I think it helps you. And it also tells something to the people drafting you, how much you value playing and winning. And when you don't, if you think it doesn't matter to them, it does.
That was Stoops talking yesterday about the opt-outs. Now, I do agree with most of what he says there. I think there's a fine line. If you're talking about a kid who's like a fringe draft pick or he's projected to go third, fourth round, okay, I can understand. You could go play and even improve your draft stock. But when we're talking about Kenny Pickett, who's going to be a first-round quarterback, we already know that. He has nothing to gain from going out there and playing. Same with Kenneth Walker. When you talk about the big names that we all know, oh, yeah, they're going to be a draft pick, probably in the first round. They're one of the best at their position. They should not play in these bowl games. And I saw a lot of people yesterday when this news came out talking about, oh, they're quitting on their team. They should feel, well, what a bunch of quit. They're not quitting. I mean, they're upgrading here. It's like, if you got a better job somewhere else, you're not necessarily, yeah, sure, maybe technically you're quitting your current job, but it's because you're taking a better opportunity. I don't think people look at you like, oh, he's a quitter. He's leaving our company. What? He's quitting on all of us. Well, because he's getting a better opportunity. Kenny Pickett is moving on to the NFL. He's going to be a first-round draft pick. He wants to secure that better opportunity. And this idea about quitting on your teammates, I think I would hope they would understand, because maybe it's a really small chance of happening. But what happens if Pickett goes out there, injures himself, and is never the same? Are those same college teammates, are they going to pay him that millions of dollars that he's missing out on now because he got injured and isn't going to be drafted in the first round? Are they going to support him? He needs to support them by being in that bowl game. Okay, but that's the risk you run. Now you tell me Pickett, oh, he's quitting on his teammates. Okay, well, what happens if he gets injured? Are those same teammates going to be there to support him moving forward and to help him when he suffers an injury in a meaningless game that costs him out of millions and his whole future in the NFL potentially? It's not worth it. And I always think back to the line in Bronx Tale, right? Mickey Mantle don't care about you. Why do you care about him? I'm not saying that all these guys on the football team don't care about each other. I played sports growing up. Now, you're a brotherhood. But let's be real about it. If Pickett or anybody gets injured in that game, of course his teammates are going to feel bad. But are they going to do anything to make up the difference and be like, hey, we'll all chip in and give you the money that you're missing out on now because you decided to come play with us? No, of course not. It's not worth it. Go to the NFL. You already did your part. Pickett was a 4-year starter, played all those games. He started almost 60 games for Pittsburgh, helped him win the ACC this year. Now go on and do your thing. You're going to be a first-round pick in the NFL. I think it's silly that people are critical of guys opting out of the bowl game. You would, too, if you had a better opportunity. You would leave your company in the 11th hour if it was for a better opportunity. We all would. Quite frankly, it's kind of what you're supposed to do. I have no problem with these guys not playing bowl games. We'll wrap up hour one next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Bells will be ringing. This sad, sad. Gone.
Wrapping up hour one here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. The great Christmas song here from the Eagles. Even if it's kind of like a depressing, I've always said Christmas movies, Christmas songs should be joyous. But this is still a great one. I've given my list before of the best Christmas songs, and things change over time. But right now, this would probably be in that top 10. That's a great song from the Eagles. Coming up, we'll preview all the games in the NFL this weekend. I'll let you know who could be vulnerable this bowl season, which teams are more motivated in these matchups. We talked about this a little bit on the show yesterday, but I compiled a list for all the bowl games, the ones that stand out most. We'll get to that next hour as well. When it comes to opt-outs, I have no issue whatsoever. Coaches opt out. We got all these coaches leaving before the bowl game. We got bowls being made up out of thin air this year just to get extra teams in bowl games. But you want to tell me how important they are. If you're already on your way to the NFL, go ahead. Go to the NFL. These games don't matter anyways. And if you got injured in one of these games, no one's going to be there to give you that money to make up the difference, unless you have some sort of insurance claim. Hour two next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.